kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have another reviews episode lined up. We got a lot to take care of. We are starting things off the way we usually do. Pernell Vaughn, you're here. How is it going, sir?
Coming back from vacation, or semi-vacation, 2 out of 3. And what that means is I'm going through another bout of vacation depression / withdrawal. It's a weird feeling.
Where did the travels of Pernell take you this past weekend?
The travels. I went to Chicago for a friend's wedding, and it was like pretty much like an hour or 2 hours north of the city, actually, in like some, you know, bumblechunk town, you know, full of, you know, the types like where pretty much I want to keep my entire body hidden because I can't let people know that sort of location. But the actual wedding venue itself was really nice, and the bridal party and the groomsmen party and all the guests were very friendly and chatty folk. It was a good time, honestly.
Nice. I saw on Facebook that you were also at some kind of hot sauce or wing convention, or what was that?
Oh, man. I went to a hot sauce festival. That's all I can call it. And it was essentially different people vending really, really hot sauces. And it was ridiculous. And I ate a good chunk of it. I met a guy who actually looked exactly like freaking Heisenberg. I actually took a photo of it. Heisenberg from Breaking Bad, mind you.
Oh, God.
I actually took a photo with him. But this dude was really cool, though. He was a legitimately awesome guy. We chatted about sauces and peppers and crap for a while. Of course, my mouth melted off. But I wasn't basically – you see, let me think here. It was essentially a really hot day. There was a lot of weird butt rock being played on the stage. And essentially, I was honestly, even despite all that, and the Trump shirts, I still had a good time because of the sauces. Yeah, I know, right? It's like, how do you manage to try to pollute such a otherwise wonderful atmosphere? And when I say wonderful, I'm not joking, because you wonder what's happening on stage when the butt rock shut up. A Carolina Reaper eating contest.
Oh, God.
It was hysterical. We're talking people on stage. They get 1 minute to eat as many Carolina Reapers as they can. And then they can't drink or consume anything else for an entire minute.
Oh, my God. Did you enter?
Oh, God, no. No, my toilet wasn't even near enough. My toilet is not close enough to try, nor is my sanity that void. So here's where it gets especially funny, though. It's not even just the actual contest. It was the way the contest was run. So there was a Guinness Book judge on the stage, right? Mm-hmm. He had a suit and a tie. When they started out for each person, they weighed the bowl. They weighed all the peppers that went into the bowl. And then whatever came out of you, they weighed that too. So they did an actual balance of how much you kept down, how much you put in, and then they did the averaging out, and whoever won. There was one guy who ate 11 freaking peppers. It was absurd. Absurd.
Fuck that. Fuck that. I hate hot stuff.
I love a hot as long as it's bearable hot. Like I like walking the line. It's almost the guy who wants to be the William Tell, get the apple above your head, and you know the guy is good with firing arrows. So it's like, he's not going to hit me. This is a joke. Everyone thinks I'm in danger, but I'm really not. Versus getting your drunk uncle blindfolded up there with the crossbows, like, here you go, kiddo. I'm going to shoot you in the brain head. Like, no, that's not going to work. I am scared, and I am actually in fucking danger, and there is no thrill to this. There is no thrill here. I am more likely to die than succeed. I quit. That's how I feel like the Carolina Reapers versus like a boot jalokia sauce that tastes really good, but it also comes with a bit of a burn. You're like, it's worth the heat because this is delectable. That's what
you know what is thrilling?
Delectables.
Video games.
They are.
I'm trying horribly to find a segue into the games that we got to talk about.
You know what's awesome about vacations? Remembering them. Memories.
Oh, here we go. The hot sauces are hot as fire, and you know what else is straight fire? The games we're about to talk about. What other awful segues could we work in?
You know, it doesn't make you throw up a game. <I don't know. laughs> The most blunt thing you could come up with. You know, when it is hot to trot, these games. You know, won't burn your ass, these games.
I don't know. You never know. Some games might be bad.
That is true, especially when you eat them like a Switch game.
Well, should we find out if any of your games are bad this week?
Let's go to town.
Cool. First game that we are going to talk about tonight is called Lumines Remastered, developed by Resonair, published by Enhance. It released June 26th. What the hell is up with my notes? On Xbox One. Yeah, June 26th on Xbox One, PS4, Switch, and PC for $14.99. An HD remaster of the original game, Lumines Remastered, beautifully marries the elements of sound, light, and puzzle action into one addictive yet easy-to-play game. You're at the center of high-energy, block-dropping action while you groove to awesome house, trance, and techno beats. Purnell, what is this game?
Well, it's Lumines, and you're like, okay, review done. And then there's like two other people who.
So you wait. You call it Lumines?
Yeah, there's Lumines and there's Lumines. I started calling it Lumines, and damn it, I'm not changing anytime soon. And
I never know what the official name is because I always hear it two different ways, either Lumines or Lumines, and I always go with Lumines because it's a take on luminous.
See, I think of it as like Lumines because there's a line that crosses over the blocks, and then the blocks detonate like a mine.
Well, they kind of just disappear.
No, they blow up, baby. No, they do disappear. But I was trying to go with my metaphor. Damn it.
Okay, well, should we rock, paper, scissors to see which name we go with for the review?
Sure.
Okay, 1, 2, 3, shoot. Did you throw?
No, what did you throw?
I threw a rock.
Because I threw paper, so sorry to hear you, buddy.
I guess you're calling it Lumines. I'm still calling it Lumines because that's what I've called it since the fucking PSP. So suck it.
Fine. I don't care.
So how's the new version?
It's honestly not necessarily new. It's pretty much, from what I gathered, at least a remake of the original game that was on the PSP. But at the same time, I want to say there is some new content because I don't remember the way I unlock some of these other skins. And what I mean by that is this. Well, before I say that, I'll go into the game description for the five people who don't know what Lumines is. So Lumines is a puzzle game where it's a music rhythm game. And the idea is that a music track plays, which creates a certain BPM for the stage you're playing on. And that BPM affects a line that scrolls from left to right on the screen. As you play, you are getting blocks of form, 2x2 blockings, that are composed of two different colors, and you are turning them in a way that when you place them on the board, you are trying to connect multiple sets of those blocks to create squares of those colored blocks. Man, it's really hard and weird to describe this game. You're trying to create squares from tinier squares. Make bigger squares so that when the line crosses over them, it pops them and makes them disappear. And of course, this is to the rhythm. And the way that you get the most points is by doing so is by making it so that every pass of the line results in blocks being destroyed. So believe it or not, I just described the entire game. It is a very simple game, but it is a game that is tons of fun because of the music element and how addictive it can be. So the main mode of the game is the challenge mode. Challenge mode challenges you by getting through 100 different stages in the game. Stage progression being based on getting a certain score, or sorry, clearing a certain number of blocks on each stage. So like you clear, say, 25 blocks on this level, you'll unlock the next quote unquote skin, which is a new song and a new BPM and a new color palette. And as you play through it, the songs get harder, sometimes by different means. Like sometimes it might be slower, sometimes being that you have less time. So you have less opportunity to clear blocks so you can fill up the screen. Sometimes it'll get faster, meaning that you'll clear blocks quickly, but you also have to be real careful not to, you know, overshoot your block dropping because it is very easy to pull that off too. But it's such an addictive game. I used to play this game for hours. And when I mean hours, I mean I've had a session where I looped the entire, like I beat all 100 levels and then
holy
the game looped.
Shit.
And I kept doing it over and over again. And eventually I would put the system to sleep come back, turn it back on, and resume gameplay. And eventually, I just killed myself because after a few days, I got tired of doing it. I got a really weird zone in the game. It's not necessarily easy per se. It's just I got that good at it and was that obsessed with it. It's just, oh my God, it's a great game. And if the person has never played the game, this is easily a must acquire. It's worth playing. And it looks beautiful on the current screen, like being on the Xbox One. It had a very nice, I mean, I can't say for sure if it's that much of a jump from the released version that was on like 360 and PS4 or PS3 rather. Mm-hmm. But the person who used to play it on PSP and moving on to this system, it looks gorgeous.
It's flashy, bright, nice. It's colorful, it's
video when the songs, different songs have like weird videos like the looping dancing people, it actually adds a bit of pizzazz even though it's a quick loop. It's just glorious. It's a great time. The music still is tip top peak. I got to my favorite song in the game, which is Abak, and it was like I was listening to it for the first time again. I was doing my doo 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 doo, dropping blocks. And for the record, whenever you clear blocks on the screen, the song throws like a bit of a modifier. So you like for example, the song I'm talking about has like a constant did it, it's a track that plays over. But when blocks are disappear, you hear a woman go whoa. Yeah. Me trying to sound like a hot to trot black soulful woman. I got none of that. I got the black part down, but that's about all I'm rolling with here. But essentially, it makes that sound effect, and it sounds corny coming out of my mouth, but on the game, it sounds great, and it makes you look forward to kind of keep that chain going. Because if you can keep a solid chain going, it sounds really good. It's just a constant like beat parade, I'll call it, that just goes through your ears. I should also probably describe the multiplayer mode too, because I think I've talked about before. So
there's a lot of modes in the game, by the way.
Oh yeah, for sure. There's like a puzzle mode where they give you a set number of blocks or something, and you probably get to clear the blocks with a certain number of passes or something along those lines. You get versus mode where they make two players share the screen, but there's a line in the middle of the screen. So when a beat line goes across from left to right, the game determines who had the best clear on their side of the board. And based on who had the best clear, they will get a bit more of the overall board attributed to them. So you're stealing the board from the other player. This has a bit of a plus and a minus to it, because depending on how the gameplay session goes, you can find yourself easily knocked out when you have less to work with on your screen, because it's essentially saying, hey, I got to get better chains than the guy on the left, but I have less screen to work with than he does. So by effect, it's likely that I'm just going to die anyway. I can't do anything compared to him. But if you got two skilled players going at it, it becomes more like a solid tug of war, and you are beating back and forth to the point where it's kind of a sweater. Because the first person to break a solid chain is going to sleep with the fishies.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking more like less like Troy McClure and more like a mobster.
Troy McClure. Oh my God.
But it's honestly a fun play session if you want to listen to some great music and push back against your friends in block dropping mayhem, so to speak.
I've already had the neighbors bang on their ceiling. Their downstairs neighbors, because of me playing the game.
Got that bass going.
Hell yeah, man. I had that shit blasting. All that said, I do have a gripe with the game.
I'm going to take a guess, because I had one too.
Load times.
Yeah, bingo. You let me guess, though. But that's exactly what I was going to say. It's load times. It's sometimes when you're transitioning from one skin to the next, you might catch a slight hiccup. And performance, you might notice the block might stop dropping while the game does it. It's fairly quick and instant, but when you're actually trying to do a lot of speed dropping to keep up with the pace, it's noticeable and it can be an annoyance.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's something that will get eked out later, and I'm actually kind of surprised to hear it because you have an Xbox One X. So I was hoping maybe you wouldn't hear something like that.
I guess loading is loading no matter what you do. For me, it was more like when you're doing the puzzle mode or the different challenges where you have to either match a certain shape or clear the blocks in a certain number of moves, the loading into those, it's not awful, but it's just long enough to be noticeable.
Yeah, I hear that, man. And it definitely gets you to, like I said, it's like that thing where you're like, oh, it's happening again, versus, oh, it's just there it is. Like, I don't even care. So it can be bothersome, but I don't think it ruins the product, thankfully. It's just, it's noticeable.
It's just an annoyance. It's just exactly. A small little annoyance overall in the whole of the package for $15. I give it a must buy. I love Lumines, even though I'm not the greatest at, like, I'm nowhere near as good as you, obviously, but I adore this game. I always have, and I'm thrilled to see it get a remaster. What about you?
I say also that Lumines deserves to buy as well, though I really, truly, genuinely hope that this also could lead to them finally making a sequel that has, like, some variations in the gameplay, not just, hell, we got more skins, more music, like, okay, Tetris 2 had bombs. I mean, yeah, they didn't take off, but at least they tried, you know? Give us something new here. We know the concept works. Take a chance.
Nice. So Lumines Remastered gets a buy it, and Lumines Remastered also gets a buy it.
Exactly.
two obviously two different games that just share a spelling.
Two different games that are exactly the same.
Yes. They're just pronounced slightly differently.
Yes.
That said, you do have one other game to talk about, and we're going to keep the music theme going with Lost in Harmony, developed by Digix Art and Midgard Studio, published by Playdius. It released June 21st on the Switch for $6.99. Dive into a fantastic musical odyssey brought by an immersive soundtrack imagined by famous composers. Experience music in a new way with the combination of rhythmic tapping and choreographic runner. Purnell, what the hell is this game?
I want to say it is overinflated by the internet, that's for sure. Like, I went to look up info on this game prior to reviewing it, and they were like, this is the best music game you've ever played. It's going to make you feel things you've never felt. You know, that kind of stuff. And while I won't go that far, I wasn't sobbing into my damn Switch, I will say that I enjoyed the game more than I expected to, because to give you some perspective on my take on things, there's a lot of music games on the Switch these days, and they all pretty much carry that note scroll from the top to the bottom, hit button to beat, you are good, that's the game. And while those are fun, they're more of the same. There's nothing that sets them apart except their OSTs, you know?
Yeah.
But this game is actually pretty different, and I've never played a music game like this before. So the main mode is called Kaito's Adventure, and essentially it is, I'd say, about 12, 13 stages, and each one features a short vignette. Well, I may be being a little generous when I say vignette, but a short little moment where Kaito is sitting on his bed, and he gets a text message from his friend, whose name is currently eludes me right now. But essentially, they are talking back and forth about, you know, just present life. And I'm assuming she's affected by some sort of, they don't even say the illness, but I want to say it's like cancer or something. And she is dealing with treatments from it. So their dialogue is talking about, hey, I miss you at school. What's going on? Well, I couldn't make it because of X. And they might reminisce about something. And after the conversation is over, Kaito goes to sleep. And the stages of the game are him dreaming of her being on a bike, holding on to him with, or so he's riding a bike and she's holding on to him behind the bike, as they are running from some obstacle, usually related to the conversations they had in the earlier scene. So one scene, one level, for example, might be them talking about how they have to actually, you know, she, like, I got to go back to, so I got to go get treatment for my sickness again, so I won't be in school tomorrow. And the kid will go, don't worry, you can fight this. I'll fight it with you, whatever. And then the stage will be them riding through, like, a World War II scene with bombs falling from the sky and, like, war vehicles driving down the road. And you're probably going, what do you mean by that? And this is the part where I step into how the gameplay works.
Mm-hmm.
Gameplay in this game features, like I mentioned before, the characters on the bike riding towards the screen. So what's happening is there are multiple things happening at once, and the player has to keep up with all of them at different points in time. One thing that could happen is you'll see objects coming from the back of the screen to the front of the screen in an attempt to collide with the characters. And the actual objects are on a rhythmic pace. So, like, even though you might not per se notice that it's rhythmic, it actually is rhythmic. Like, you might see three, like, pieces of wood fly from the back, and they'll go by, like, do-do-do, do-do-do, and those are the blocks flying at the screen. So you have to move the characters left to right to evade the debris or the animals or whatever. Sometimes you'll see lights on the ground, and when you see the lights on the ground, you have to move the bike so that it's actually about to collide with the light so that you'll eventually ride over it and you'll get points for collecting the light. It's called starlight in the game. Occasionally, you'll find a giant ball in that same way. You have to ride over it. There's three on each stage, and you have to collect those for basically to really help your score and possibly to unlock levels. Then there's another thing that happens where sometimes objects will fly in from the left and the right side of the screen, and it'll be indicated by large arrows. And when you see those, you have to kind of make the bike swerve to the left or swerve to the right to avoid like a big eagles or boulders, something like that. And then there's also objects that'll be coming up as the same way that the starlight does. And it'll be indicated by like an arrow or like an arrow pointing at you in a certain area of the screen. So it's indicating that you are about to ride over an object. You have to either dodge it or jump over it. And since you are riding towards it, you can't see it until it's actually there. So how do you know? Rhythmic timing. You see an arrow, you have to know that at a certain beat coming up, you got to jump over it. And it's surprisingly more intuitive than it sounds. Like, I rarely ever trip over stuff because I've gotten pretty good at seeing arrow, hop, and getting out of the way of stuff. And the last gameplay mechanic, because there's another one, and this is the strangest one of all. Sometimes buttons will fly from the left to the right of the screen, and you have to press the button according to what it shows when it hits the right side of the screen. And they all refer to the face buttons, A, B, X, and Y. So you might be riding your bike trying to dodge, you know, objects while also keeping note of the letters going across the screen so you can hit those in time. So it has you dodging stuff and inputting keys, trying to get perfect beats. Oh, and also collect starlight and dodge trucks. It gets to be,
God, it sounds hectic.
It gets to be pretty hectic on the harder stuff. I mean, they lead you into it, so you're not just like immediately getting overwhelmed by things. But once it gets going, you're like, oh my God, I think they're going to make me do both of these at once. Crap! And it ends up being making for quite a unique experience. I honestly had a great time playing this game. And there's an additional story that's included with the game called, like, I want to say it's like Mushi's Escape or Mirai's Escape. And it's about a robot escaping from a lab. And levels are progressed differently, whereas in the original mode is based on just stage progression. And that mode is based on how many orbs you collect. So if you collect enough starlight orbs, you'll unlock another level. And I'm not sure if the orbs are solely related to his mode or if they're from the main game too, but I think it's from the main game as well. So the more starlight you collect, the more levels you can do from Mirai's Escape, and you're essentially playing two games.
Damn, that sounds really cool.
It is. I honestly had a great time with it. I was playing on the plane, and to put perspective on it, you know for a fact, if I didn't feel like it, I'd be like, this game sucks. I'm moving on and playing something I want to play. Mm-hmm. But I had The Lost Child with me on the plane, and I was starting to play that, and I was like, you know, I need to do some review stuff. Let me play this game while I'm flying on my plane flight. And I ended up just kind of shelving Lost Child on the return flight and solely focusing on this game because I was enjoying it that much.
Nice.
It's a good game. I don't know how much it costs, but I do know I enjoyed it.
Well, then overall, for $7, which is the asking price, what is your verdict?
Oh, there's a lot of gameplay there, and it's fun. I think it's worth $7 easily. If you like rhythm games and you've been playing, you know, the Musinks and the Vos, whatever the hell you pronounce them, it starts with a V. Vos. So basically, if you're playing all those like PM Studio games and those like cell phone port games that have been popping off, I think you can play this one, too, because this was very different from all of those. I do wish there was more. There's a lot of classical music remixes in here, which I'm getting real used to across these game setups, but it's still a fun game. The music is still good, and the original stuff is awesome.
Nice. Sounds good. I might have to pick this one up myself, especially since it's only $7.
Yeah, and I will say that even though the story for Kaito's Adventure is pretty, like, bare bones, like, I feel sick, you won't be sick later, feel better, stage. I mean, it surprisingly still had me going, I wonder what they're going to talk about today, because you'll see, like, the date will be January, and then the next stage, the calendar will go, like, 5 months ahead, like, holy crap, what happened to her within 5 months, I wonder? And you kind of get a little curious to wonder before going into the next stage. And you also kind of wonder what the stage is going to be like based on the conversation before you start it.
Yeah. Overall, sounds really cool, though. So
it is.
Awesome.
I wouldn't say wrong now, would I? Don't answer that.
Maybe.
I mean, I said don't answer that.
You do pronounce it Lumines, so I don't know if I could trust you anymore.
Now that's why you should trust me, because I'm giving you the right pronunciation. Not like those other suckers out there with their lies and their meanness. You know what I'm talking about.
Maybe when I send in the review, they'll reply back with, like, listen, idiots, it's pronounced this way.
I hope they do. That would be great.
That'd be great. If you're listening, people at Enhance, if you're listening, just call me an idiot and tell me how to say it. I don't care. I just want to know the truth. But Purnell, always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts to wrap it up?
Well, I got another trip coming up, so prepare for more moroseness, but also more fun stories.
Hot sauce this time?
Honestly, it won't be a hot sauce convention, but I'm going to find some hot sauce because they should have some where I'm going. So I want some. It's going to be on my food. And chorizo. Please, chorizo. God, I love that stuff.
All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called Rainbow Skies, developed and published by East Asia Soft, released June 26th on PS4, PS Vita, and PS3 for $29.99. Rainbow Skies is a fantasy RPG with turn-based battles and a humorous story. Immerse yourself in a colorful and vibrant world filled to the brim with friends and foes, murky dungeons, turn-based battles, town shops, and everything else your role-playing heart desires. Checking this one out. If you couldn't tell by the laugh, Tim Akibis, how are you doing?
I am wonderful, I guess. I guess we'll go with wonderful. I'm quite great. Things are okay.
Are you giggling at the fact that there's a humorous story?
Yeah, that they said it's humorous. Yeah.
So how is the game?
Sure are trying. Oh, man. Oh, buddy. Oh, boy. Rainbow Skies. Ugh. Lube those pipes before I dig into this one. So, all right. So, yeah, this game is an RPG. It's kind of like your standard RPG, and that you're walking around. Everything takes place on kind of like a three quarters. Like when I was looking at the trailer for this game and saw the battles, I'm like, oh, this kind of looks like a tactics game. You know, it looks like a Final Fantasy Tactics or a Disgaea sort of deal. But in practice, no, you kind of walk around a map as you would an RPG. And when you see an enemy, you can walk up to that sucker and it'll tell you how many more monsters are waiting inside of him. And then it pops you out into another screen where you perform something akin to like a tactics style battle. So it's like a bit of a hybrid in that sense. Since mostly in like your Disgaea, your Final Fantasy Tactics, you just have like an overworld map. You're more or less just selecting the next battle from a menu. Anyways, yeah. this you're wandering around exploring and picking up items and talking to people and such. But no, when it blows out to your tactic style battle, and enemies don't respawn, so there's not really a lot of room for grinding unless you decide to do optional, side quests and stuff, which is good, bad, depending on how you feel about it. But yeah. So So you get into these battles and like one of the things that never stopped annoying me while playing this game is that like when you have your character, you go to take your turn and it shows you, the directions your characters can move. And sometimes like often really characters, including enemies, will get multiple moves per turn. We'll touch on that in a bit. So it's like, okay, my character can move this many spaces this turn. I can move this space, this many spaces, and hit this dude over here. It kind of like lays out kind of some basic information for you. But it's like, and maybe this is my fault that I'm so used to these, that style of battle being like, okay, I'm going to move a cursor, pick my spot, confirm, then they move, and then this, this, and this. And this one is just like, you push the button to move, and then they move. And when it's on one of those three quarters perspectives where it's like, you know, when you press up, you might go up left or up right, and you can actually toggle this back and forth depending on what you're comfortable with. But like, my brain never kind of settles into that. And despite the fact that like it has little arrows pointing in which direction like up is going to mean, I still took like a lot of processing power in my brain to sit there and think like, okay, I'm going in this direction. This is where I want to go. Let me just double check the command. Okay, I'm going, because there was no backsies on it. Like if you fuck up, it's just like, well, there's my turn. My turn is gone. And it was like, ugh, it just drove me nuts constantly. And you don't really, yeah. I wrote, don't confirm
sounds like command. User
annoying.
Error.
Well, you know, I guess, but also that's something that might hang people up. Like I True. Think, you know, that having just a simple button confirm there would be nice, but you know, it's just like, if it was straight overhead and it was straight, like up, down, left, right, my brain would wrap around it a lot easier, but whatever. But you get into these battles and man, like you find yourself like out of your depth, like despite knowing kind of what's in the battle before you jump into it, like you end up, cause it shows you an enemy, then it tells you how many enemies are in there, but you can very easily like kind of find yourself out of your depth. And like early on in the game, you only have one character a lot of the time. Like this is only in like the first couple hours. Like sometimes you only have one character and like you're in these battles against like five or six different enemies. And even when your party kind of expands a little bit, like it really goes for overwhelming numbers rather than like a more tactical, like thinking person's approach to battles. It's just trying to smother you with like a ton of enemies.
Like a battle of attrition.
Yeah, I suppose. There is this, yeah, there's just some weird things, some weird choices. Like there's some enemies, like they'll attack you. And when they go to do their attack, there's an animation. I'm like putting down my notebook so I can gesture like this is a video podcast. So there's like an animation where it pulls like the target character and the enemy character to another battlefield where then the animation takes place and then it takes you back to the original battlefield, where I'm like, just like, why did they do this instead of having an animation that could just play out here? Why is there this extra 5 seconds of like going to another battlefield and watching this canned animation and going back? And then keep in mind that like some characters are going to do this possibly a couple times in a row on their turns. It's just like not a smooth feel, like coupled with like having to think too much about where I'm going to move and then like how the enemies, you know, attack you. And like with the numbers of enemies that are coming at you, like sometimes you're just sitting there and like there's boss enemies. More enemies that like three turns in a row. Wait, hang on. Let me just double check this. Multiple actions in a row. Yeah, yeah. Imagine a boss getting like six attacks in a row, because sometimes you can take two actions on a turn. Like, yeah, that's it. So yeah, like on a turn, like your character, oh, I can move an attack. That's cool. And then I can hit an enemy twice. That's cool. But then when it's happening to you, it is so not cool. When the enemy is sitting there like blowing up your party, and I'm just sitting there like watching this happen, like what the fuck am I supposed to do here? Am I like moving things wrong? Should I go like do some optional stuff? There doesn't really seem to be very much for me at this moment. I'm just like feeling a lot out of my depth, but well, not out of my depth, but I'm just like, why is six turns in a row, like six turns in a row, or six actions in a row, I guess I should say, six attacks in a row. And I'm just like, god damn. Man, like, that's a lot. And this might be a me thing. This is one of those things that I feel like there's like your kind of meathead bruiser guy, there's his level headed buddy who seems to be an archer, and then there's a girl who's a mage, because obviously, and like your archer guy, like he just seems to totally suck and not be good at anything. Like his abilities seem to suck. Like I'm sitting there, I'm like, he's got a bow. He should be able to like bow things, but it just seems like he has to melee them and he doesn't do any damage. So he's just there. He just kind of dies a lot. And I'm just like, what's up with you, Lane? Am I missing something here? I don't know. You level up your characters. You don't gain experience from battles. You get these stones from battle, which you then in the menu, you can go and then pour them into different stats. And then I think as you level, that's what happens. So you do get experience, but that doesn't actually increase your stats. That gives you a higher, that gives you more options for using these stones to increase your stats.
Hmm.
Which is fine. It's like almost like the old sphere grid. Remember that? Except there's no grid, but you know, you get stones to put into your stuff. So you kind of get to customize how you want your characters to progress, like in the near term a little bit, though. As it was, I quickly filled out everything, and then I'm just like dropping stones into HP all willy nilly. The inventory in this game is very fucking limited off the bat. Like, most of your bag slots in the inventory and the menus in this game are kind of horrendous. It's just like in your inventory, and you have different like kind of item types that you pick up, and each item type you pick up has a limited amount of inventory space. So like early on, you can only carry 5 potions, which is not very many potions. Like, you know, in the first couple hours, you start getting expansion slots, but I'm just like almost right off the bat in this game, because they start you out some potions. It's like, you don't have enough room for this. Do you just want to use it? I'm like, I guess, or sell it, which is cool that when you pick up excess, like in a battle, you can just sell it right away. Would like to carry more stuff. I kind of need more healing potions for these battles where I'm getting fucking smoked by 6 attacks on my head at a time, if I even survive those turns enough to then chug some potions on the other end. The most damning thing in the menus to me is that to switch which characters, like equipment skills you're looking at, you have to hold triangle and hit L and R, which took me, of all the things, this game likes to break out into exhaustive tutorials quite a bit, but they never mentioned that. And I realized, like, there's this little icon next to the character in the lower left, and I eventually figured out that's what it was telling me to do, because I'm just so used to, I don't know, every RPG ever where you just hit L and R to switch between your characters, and then you menu otherwise with the D-pad, right? Like, that seems been fairly standard since Final Fantasy 4 or 2, you know, depending on where you lived.
Yeah.
And that just, like, drove me nuts. There's weird things like when you use a potion in battle, there's no animation. And so, like, the first couple times, I was like, wait, what, did I use the potion or not? Like, what just happened? It's just like, use potion, and then it's just like, on the next character. I'm like, okay, well, is he healthy? I can't, like, what is going on? Just, like, tough to keep track of what's going on here. So I was just, like, not having a lot of fun with the battles. It just ended up, like, having, you know, not really feeling like I could engage enemies very well, because as I moved in on an enemy, then I'd get swarmed by 3 others. So you had to be very, it wasn't like I was being very careful with my attacks. And, you know, I want a game that's going to, you know, push my brain and make me think about how I want to use every move. But in this case, it was just like, well, how am I simply maneuvering myself so I can kind of survive? Can I, like, put myself in this corner of the map so only 2 of them can get at me at a time, and I might be able to survive, you know, by only fighting 2 enemies at a time or something like that? Like, why does this one character out of my 3 character party seem to totally suck ass and not be able to do anything? Like, what is wrong with him or me? Why is this character just seem to be completely useless? Like, what is going on? Am I missing something? This game is a sequel, actually. And the first one seemed to be pretty well received, but I was just completely missing, like, what this game was trying to sell to me. And besides, you know, all that, oh my God, the writing in this game, holy shit, is it trying to be funny? But no jokes, as I throw up the old air quotes for those listening at home and not just like using some kind of daredevil power to rate see my fingers going up, but just like no jokes were landing. Like, the characters, your character, the main character, the first guy you control, the sword guy, it's just like, okay, yeah, he's a lazy sword guy who's dumb and doesn't pay attention, and, you know, his buddy is the smart guy who tries to straighten him out, and I guess we're supposed to laugh whenever sword guy is dumb about something, and it's just like, And so it's like, yeah, they'll pull up a tutorial, like, which a quick tutorial thing to like kind of explain something. And it's like ends up being like 20 some pages long. And so much of it is just bullshit. It's like, if you're going to be a tutorial, like get to the point, like cut out all this excess, like just bullshit dialogue that I don't need, like from these characters that I don't like. Just get to the point of the tutorial, like cut to the point. Don't like, you know, dance around it. Don't try to be cute about it. Just like give me the information, then move on. Because there's a lot of systems in this game too, as far as like upgrading your character and your weapons and when to do side quests and how to fight battles. And there's a lot to take in. But at the same time, it's just like it, like the information isn't conveyed very well. So I always constantly felt like I was missing something. But pretty quickly, just like there is so much dialogue and I was just skipping through it straight to get like the next story marker, because it would just put it in your menu. I'm just like, okay, I get the gist of what this guy is going to tell me. Just skip it all, move on. Like it was not entertaining me in a humorous aspect. And man, I dreaded going back to this game over the course of the past 3 weeks to play more of it. I'm just like, oh my God.
it's a bummer to hear, because some of the other reviews I've read, because I haven't had a chance to play the game myself yet, but they said that the narrative was improved compared to the original. So I was,
God, woof.
I guess it just didn't land with you at all.
That was the worst part of the game for me, was definitely like the writing and the narrative stuff. I was just like, I felt like after I knew that character for about 10 minutes, I knew nothing else he said was surprising. And by a couple hours into the game, I was just like, like the characters are just such predictable kind of archetypes. Like I said, mage girl and smart bow guy and dumb burly sword dude. Like I've seen this before. Like I get it. Like the kind of the gist of the game is like your first two characters live on this island continent where they don't think there's any land below, but lo and behold, there is land below. There's a whole world down there. And things kind of go from there.
A whole new world.
It's like Skyward Sword, sort of. Sort of.
It sounds like this one didn't really connect with you that much.
No, huh? It didn't connect with me. But, you know, if you're scrabbling for games on your Vita, you know, not a lot is dropping for that system anymore.
Or your PS3.
Yeah, it does. I mostly put my hours into this game on my Vita. For that matter. And it's only $30, but still for me, I'm just like, there's other things you could spend your money on. And I would give it a hard pass from this guy, but it is worth noting that it is cross by, it is on some systems that don't see a lot of action. So, you know, you can factor that in, but from this guy, this is a deny it.
But if someone's hunkering for an old school RPG strategy game, it didn't sound too bad. It just seemed like a lot of it didn't connect with you personally.
Sure. That's how reviews go, man.
Yeah. Everything is, it's like, hey, I'm opinions.
I'm only one voice in this echo chamber of the internet.
Oh man. Well, Tim, always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final words to wrap it up?
I couldn't help but borrow a turn of phrase from a classic X-Strike Studios film, Silent Horror, and that this game is indeed a rainbow of brown. Sorry, I had to.
Oh, man. Moving on. Next game to talk about is called Omega Strike, developed by WobblyWare and Stage Clear Studios, published by our friends at Digirati. It released June 12th on PS4, June 15th on Xbox One for $11.99. Omega Strike is a Metroidvania game with a vast open-ended world and multiple playable characters. Explore the world, learn new abilities, upgrade your weapons, and defeat Dr. Omega and his mutant armies. Checking this one out, Jacob Garner, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing okay. How about yourself?
Yeah, I'm doing the show. So that's
fortunate.
That's a thing.
It is. It's like 391 episodes of a thing.
Yeah, it's, God damn, what have I done with my life?
A whole lot of wasted paper towels.
Yeah, that too. Anyway, how's Omega Strike?
It's pretty good, especially for somebody who's, you know, not that great at video games like me. You know. So, as the description says, it's like a Metroid Castlevania-ish kind of game. I didn't even say that there's some Metal Slug thrown in there too, but not on like the level of Mercenary Kings, which we reviewed, like 2 months back or so.
Something like that. A couple of months.
Yeah. Anyway, So there's this guy named Dr. Omega, and he's got these mutants that he wants to take over the world with, which kind of looks like a Mad Max-ish kind of world. So obviously, I think it's supposed to be post-apocalyptic, but I'm not too sure. But anyway, so you're moving through this like whole world, and you've got three guys to choose from. One of them's like a big guy who can move rocks. The other one's like this kind of smallish guy who can like fit in tight areas, like not your butt, Joe. And then there's the normal guy who's got like a shotgun and, you know,
double jump.
Like, yeah, double jump guy. There really isn't like the tutorial level allows you to figure out like, you know, the different play styles for each guy. And then like the tight corners guy and, the rock pushing guy, both of them eventually get taken away, but you get them back later on in the game. But I'll be honest, it's just like, it really doesn't matter which guy you go with. I mean, obviously you're going to need certain guys for specific moments, but like one of the nice things about the game, which is also a drawback of it, it's just like it allows you to figure out what playstyle you like, but then at the same time, there's really not that much of a difference between the three different characters. And so it's just like, eh, with them. So you're moving throughout the world. And of course, there is going to be some backtracking involved because after the tutorial level, you lose the two guys. But then as you get them back, you like if you see an area that has like a block or like a tight crawl space, you'll know like later on, okay, I'm going to have to come back here to get something, whether it's like, you know, continue the mission or if there's like an upgrade or some stuff like that.
So classic Metroidvania where there's a lot of backtracking for secrets and other fun stuff.
Yes, but I wouldn't say not nearly as bad as like the original Metroid. But there is going to be some, like, it's a good introduction to that kind of, I don't know if I'd even call it a genre, like a subgenre. I don't know, but you know, it's a good introduction to that kind of game. Like the other, so you're moving throughout this world. You also have a bunch of enemies to defeat. There's not really a whole lot of variety to the enemies. And also it's like, it's pretty easy to figure out, you know, how to kill them. And the bosses, I had some difficulty with them, but again, I'm not the best at these kind of games, but they did seem to be more like bullet sponges than anything. Like all they would do is just like take up like all the bullets, and then but then at the same time there would still be like a pattern eventually you'd pick up on, and yeah. It might take you 5 or 6 tries, but eventually you'd defeat them. So it's not the hardest game out there, but I had a lot of fun with it, and it's a pretty good retro game or retro styled game.
Yeah, I played it a bit myself. I had a lot of fun with it. I enjoyed the whole swapping characters mechanic. I was kind of bummed that they were stripped away so close to the start of the game, but I can understand, you know, being a Metroidvania, giving you abilities as you go through the game to encourage you to go back and re-explore those areas you've been in already.
Right.
So I can't be mad at the game for doing what the genre does.
Mm-hmm. I think my only other negative about it it wasn't particularly hard to explore the area, but I never found the map to be particularly helpful.
Yeah, I can see that.
It was very basic. It looked like it was, you know, from an Atari game. I didn't find it as helpful as I'd hoped, but I don't know if there's any plans for like DLC and like, you know, extra areas or even like a sequel game or anything like that. But, you know, I'd definitely be down for more of this.
Oh, me too. It was a blast.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I think it's it's like $12 on Xbox.
Yep, $11.99.
Yeah. I mean, I for $11.99, I thought it was totally worth it. And also I was looking it up before we recorded this. Right now with the Steam summer sale, it's like $5 on Steam, which it was like, hell yeah, that's even better.
Nice.
So well,
overall $12 on this one. What is your official verdict?
Absolutely. I really enjoyed it.
Man, you didn't even think about that, did you?
No, I really dug it. It's like the Metroidvania game that's like, it's along my level. You know, it throws some challenges at me, but not enough that I'm going to rage quit.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And so it's like, yay, I did it. It's like, yay, good job, Jacob. Yeah.
Proud of you.
Gonna hang this right up on the fridge.
So proud of you. Yeah, on the fridge. Just print out a screenshot of you beating a boss and give it to your wife, and she just hangs it on the fridge. I'm so proud of you, Jacob.
Next, we're going to work on coloring within the lines.
Oh, man. Well, Jacob, always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts to wrap it up?
You know, I'm still having a blast playing Super Mega Baseball 2. Like, I don't know if you've been... Yeah,
that game's pretty goddamn good.
Yeah, like, I don't know if you've been seeing me, like, watching me up on Twitter. Like, I keep talking about it. Like, with the games that I'm playing, a couple of games ago, I hit 3 of the pitchers. It was phenomenal. It's just such a wonderful thing. Three of them in one game. I was really impressed. Like, I honestly think it needs to become an achievement if they make a sequel. I don't know. I'm just having a blast. Like, I'm leading my team to their whatever the World Series is again. Like, I know it's set to 0, but whatever. Like, this is how I relax nowadays. But also I've tweeted to the devs about it, and I'm hoping that next year, like, they'll add in the stats for the other teams, because like I don't know if you've seen my scores, but it's just like I'm beating teams like 70-2.
Yeah, because you're playing on Ego Zero.
Yeah, I know I am. I know.
Bump it up a bit.
Shut up. I fully admit to it. But anyway,
games if you bump it up a bit.
Here's the thing. I don't mind. I'm having a blast. But the thing is that I'd love to see, like, some of these pitchers, I have to ruin their season. Like, today, I just had a guy with an ERA of 225.
No, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And I'm just like, oh, my God. I need to be able to track him through the rest of the season to see, like, you know, if he can somehow bring it down.
Oh, my Lord. These are really, really long final thoughts. So give me something quick and to the point.
Hey, what? What was wrong with that final thought? It was great.
Good enough. All right, next game to talk about is called Spirit Sphere DX, developed by Endhorn, published by Fabraz, released July 2nd on Switch for $10. One part tennis, other part magical beatdown. Play solo or compete with friends by battling across fantastical realms and unleash the power of the Spirit Spheres. Checking this one out, Chris Taylor, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. We're recording on a Tuesday. This is unusual. Oh, wait, am I not supposed to say that?
Like it matters. No one's listening.
This is actually live every time you hear it.
Every single time. We have nothing better to do than just repeat this stuff ad nauseum.
Yes, yes. No. Spirit Sphere DX. So I assume, I actually did not research this at all, that there must be a Spirit Sphere that existed before this one. So that
I have no clue.
Me neither.
I didn't research either. Yay!
But it's interesting that they chose the DX moniker because it very much looks and plays a lot like a Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening, except that instead of adventuring around and going through dungeons, you swing your sword and try to knock a ball into the other team's goal. Kind of like tennis, a little bit more like Pong, because, you know, tennis obviously has different rules. But yeah, so this is a an adventure game flavored sort of tennis that it stars a lady named Lynn who looks a whole lot like she needs a K at the end of her name. Her name is Lynn, last name just dodging copyright issue. that I could have written that joke better. Anyways, so she has
it's
a
better
sword.
When it's unpracticed.
Yeah, I know, right? So she has like a sword, and like she swings it, and you can hold down the A button, and then she charges up a spinning shot. She is a fairy like green lady with a hat, unless you change your color. But the available palettes are very Zelda like. And she is one of four playable characters that you get from the onset. The other one being a sort of mystical dog-like thing, kind of a dog. Swings his tail, runs around fast, doesn't actually talk, which is funny. He just says, like, different verbalizations that a dog would make.
Bark.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then there is a little wizard. He has, like, a different skill set as well. Basically, like, the four characters have wildly different ways that they can act, that they can hit the spheres, which is kind of cool. Very differing play styles. So the wizard has this whole thing where instead of dashing around really fast, like, you know, you can move around the court, I guess you could say. But also, if you push the dash button, he'll actually teleport, which is, you know, he'll teleport to, like, any side of the thing, which is really cool. And then there is a big, like, giant guy with an axe whose name is Dwarf, which is he's the cheatinest on the computer, let me tell you. But he's actually pretty fun to use. So, like, every character gets their regular shot and their charge shot and a dash, as well as being able to use items. And so his charge shot, instead of being just, you know, charge it up and it's more powerful, it just makes him start spinning around slowly. And if the spear connects with his axe, then it, like, it launches it, which is pretty fun to use. And clearly the computer has mastered it. But the cool thing is about this game is that you get many, many modes to choose from. So the most normal, I suppose, thing that you can do as a single player is play through the campaign, which pits you as any one of the four characters. Oh, and there are four unlockable characters. I haven't unlocked any of them, so I don't know what they are. I assume they're enemies that you fight during the game. But yeah, in campaign mode, you face against the other guys, and you know, you get infinite chances to try and beat them, which is good because you'll need it. But the cool thing is, if you happen to find yourself, like, you know, unable to complete a campaign and having to exit, at least you get coins that you can, or gems, I suppose, that you can then spend to unlock items as you go. So that's a thing that'll keep you going with that. But yeah, really, the whole point of it is just to take that sphere and knock it into the other player's thing. There's also a squash mode, which works like the game squash in the sense that you bounce it, the sphere against a wall, both of you facing the same direction, and whoever the little sword icon appears over is the only person that can contact, you know, the sphere, and then you have to try and keep it from the back wall. Yeah, and also avoid it if you're the other character. So that one's really tough to get used to, but it's also pretty fun. And and there are items that the game drops whenever you, well, in Lynn's stage, it's when you, destroy a bush. And then, yeah, there's bow and arrow bombs and boots and, you know, again, all that.
Very heavily inspired by Zelda items.
Yes, no other way to put it, really.
A wink and a nod to the Legend of Zelda series.
Yes, exactly. But and there's actually some other like modes that I like in this one. Is the way that it handles two player is that you can. It seems like it has a lot more two player options, like couch stuff, than it does single player options. Among my favorites is there's of course a mode where you can have up to four players at once. There's a thing where I guess three players team up against a boss character or something like that. And then there's one that it does in portable mode where you actually play the Joy-Cons with them still attached to the Switch, so you sit across from each other and play the game that way.
Oh, that's neat.
Like kind of like a tabletop arcade or something. And that was really cool to me. I really want to try that with somebody if I ever find a friend.
I know the feeling. Oh, man. Well, overall, $10 on this one. What do you think of it?
I think it's great. For $10, I think that it's a worthy purchase. It's a little high on difficulty. I think there's a bit of a learning curve. Like anything, like actually, funny enough, I had the same issue with a mini game in Reverie. It's not so much that hitting the ball is tough, it's accidentally bumping the ball behind you while you're trying to get behind it.
Like, oh, man.
There's different like obstacles that presenting a Zelda-like game with a different gimmick like does to you. So again, there's a bit of a learning curve, but once you get into it, I think that it's very good. And of course, you can always be just as bad as your friends. And I feel like this is very good for people with friends. And actually with that ball bouncing thing, if you have the wizard guy and you teleport, you can actually teleport behind the ball, and that he ends up being a really good defensive character for that. So it's really about learning the characters and, you know, and getting them going. And there's a ton of unlockables to keep you coming back. So this one won't be the, you know, just play it once and put it down kind of thing.
Nice. Sounds so,
yeah,
good.
$10. Sounds. Yeah, it is good.
Awesome. Next game to talk about. And this one, I feel bad. I told our publisher Digirati that we featured this one on our last episode, but we actually had to cut last week's recording short because of bad storms in my area. So we're covering it now, and that is Ink, developed by Zach Bell Games, published by Digirati, released June 19th on the Switch for $7.99. The world's first splatformer is here. Ink is a fast-paced platformer with a twist. Levels are invisible and must be splattered with brightly colored paint before they can be seen. Chris, tell us about this one.
World's first splatformer. I don't know. Would Splash count, do you think? Splasher? Anyway.
I don't know, because that one you're just kind of like spraying everywhere. This one,
I guess, yeah.
That's how you see the levels.
Yeah, exactly. So it's very simple concept. In Ink, you are a little ball, I presume, of tofu, maybe a paint wedge, something like that. I don't know. But you're a white square that. Every time you move across anything solid, you paint it in a different color. So, you know, rainbows happen constantly. And the thing is that you are supposed to find the level, basically, before you can complete it. And that will often involve, like, some blind jumps where if you push jump twice, which accesses the double jump, of which you'll definitely need, then it will like splatter a bunch of paint like in all directions. And if that paint hits a platform, then now you can see that platform. The cool thing about this one is that like all challenge platformers of this ilk, you will end up dying constantly. But every time you die, your little character explodes into paint. And so it actually assists your next life to have your character just, you know, eat it the first time.
So the worse you do, the easier it gets.
Exactly. I mean, up to a point, because obviously at some point you'll reach the saturation level where the whole level is covered in paint.
And then you just got to be good.
Then you just got to do it. adding to this, of course, is that every once in a while a stage will have a special item that you can also try and find, a little heart icon. And you have to also uncover and find and grab that. And in the same life, you have to beat the level. You have to pick up that special item every single time. I'm not sure what the significance of the special items are, but it at least indicates to you that there are 20. The game actually doesn't tell you how many levels there are ultimately, unless it's outside of the game somewhere. I myself got to level 29, which it put me past. Like, basically, after a few levels, they introduce enemies, which are also blocks, and you have to basically get your block on top of their block to destroy them, like, you know, Mario style. But, you know, that's considered a stomp or whatever. Yeah. But, yeah, in those levels, you have to defeat every enemy before the door will appear. And after many, many levels, then you actually have to fight a boss in the same way. And so after the first boss, they in the 20s, then they introduce spike walls, which are super challenging. So that's basically where I ended up, was the good old level 29. But you played this one too, right?
Yeah, played it quite a while ago on Xbox One. Really enjoyed it. I think you covered most of the basics. I believe there's like 70 levels, something like that. So you're about halfway through it.
Oh, okay.
I never beat it myself because I'm not that good.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm that good either. But the cool thing about this game is that I think it's fast paced enough, and definitely the challenges are, you know, basically like uncovering the level is really only half the battle. I mean, it's a very, very challenging platformer. So, and I've definitely found myself drawn into hours of just sitting there and repeating levels. And the cool thing about this one, and I'm not seeing this in too many of these this type of game, is that it also has simultaneous two-player.
Nice.
So one person
I didn't even realize I had a multiplayer mode because I'm all by myself.
Well, me too, but I still loaded it up just to see what it was.
You fucked around with options.
Yeah, I do that sometimes. Trying to be thorough. We owe that to Digerati for not covering this game last time.
Even though I told them we did.
Yeah, twice.
Sorry, guys. Sorry.
But yeah, no, the second player is just another player that's on the screen that also, you know, it's another pair of hands for splattering that paint around. And they just show up as a hollow square instead of the solid one. Oh. And so that's the way to differentiate between them. I thought it would be funny if they made it a female character by adding a bow.
Ms. Ink.
Yeah, Ms. Ink. But MS Ink, that sounds like a old Microsoft program. Anyways, so yeah, Ink is really, really good. I am very happy about this one. Challenge platformers are not usually my thing. I usually abandon them after a while, but this one I definitely felt a lot more compelled to try and get in there and really get it. And it doesn't hurt that the soundtrack is really good. It's a nice ambient, sometimes kind of rocking. But it's a really good, like, sort of half-chill, half-intense soundtrack that I quite enjoyed.
Nice. So $8 on this one, what do you think?
Oh, yeah. It's right there in that pocket of, like, you should just get it because it's good. And $8 is no real it is no object when it comes to quality Switch games.
Very true.
Very true.
Well, we got one final game to talk about tonight, and that is called Paranautical Activity, developed by Code Avarice and Stage Clear Studios, published once again by our friends at Digerati, and we're actually covering it this show, so again, sorry about Ink. released June 28th on the Switch for $7.99. Paranautical Activity is a blisteringly fast first-person shooter that combines classic arena-style FPS action with roguelite elements. An intense and challenging test of precision, skill, and reflexes await. Chris, how is Paranautical Activity?
blindingly fast? It's It's not all that fast.
Blisteringly fast.
What is that one FPS where you could put in a code to make it like 3 times faster for no real reason?
God, I have no clue.
It was one of those earlier ones. Anyway, when I think blisteringly fast, I think of that or glitching out Morrowind to where you can run all the way across the continent in like a minute. No. Paranautical activity is kind of like an old school idea. Like it's one of those things. It's kind of one of those retro games that never existed in the first place. So it's just kind of a throwback to something that you think could have been there.
Mm-hmm.
Like an alternate past, I guess. It's a smooth running fully 3D FPS, but all the actual characters and, you know, and everything is this kind of, they're kind of built out of basic textureless like polygons to kind of give them a Lego look. So it's kind of, everything looks a little bit basic and like it's made out of Legos. And, you know, like I said, almost nothing has any kind of texture to it. It's just everything's sort of built out of blocks. So that's the presentation of it. It's a little bit like One More Dungeon in that sense, but even One More Dungeon had textures. So this is a game that has a unique look for sure. It's not something I remember ever seeing in FPSs of the past. However, yeah, this one, the twist on this one is that the actual levels are randomized. I found that generally, you know, you go from room to room on a map and then find the elevator for the next floor, you know, kind of a la Doom. And I noticed, though, that the rooms did tend to have the same kinds of interactions. You just never knew when you pop into a room whether it's going to be like these little, you know, they look like the little, what do they call them, Jawas from the first Star Wars. I mean, fourth Star Wars, whatever. With the little wizard guys.
Yeah.
The dinky dink dink guys from Spaceballs. you know, you might fight them, and their thing is that they can shoot back at you, and that's very basic. Or sometimes you go in and there's a freaking like just a giant sperm whale like floating around in the middle of space and just like shooting fireballs at you. So like it might be a big boss creature, it might be just the little guys. You never know. And so either way, you have to kind of react to the situation and, you know, employ some really frantic strategies, because you do not get a whole lot of damage you can take in this game. It's like any real roguelike, it's just measured out in hearts. So, like, you know, you might have, like, I don't know, 5 hearts, and an enemy can take between 1 and, like, 3 damage, I guess. I think most things only did 1 damage, but then they hit you pretty hard. Constantly. But then, you know, you have different characters that you can choose from. They're not really characters, it just shows you their weapon, and it has a description like the tank who has more hearts, and their weapons are all interesting. That is to say, none of them are like standard FPS fare. So you have like one character where you shoot a crossbow, which you have to draw back for like a second in order for it to actually fly. Otherwise, the arrow just kind of flops out in front of you. And then, like, you have a character that has a sword, and another character. Of course, the tank ended up being the one I liked the most, and he has the standard issue shotgun, of course, which is, you know, every FPS has a shotgun. And then he has a freaking cannon, like just an old school cannon that you have to sit there and hold the shot button for a little bit, and then this big old ball just barrels out and does really good damage.
Nice.
Yeah. But no, you won't find any standard pistols or like machine guns or anything like that here. And I feel like that would have probably helped, but then again, they have 4 other unlockable characters just like that other game. So I'm sure that it's around there somewhere. I took a look at the unlockables in this game, and it really does look like, you know, like One More Dungeon. It's the kind of thing where you just keep going back in and you keep trying to unlock all the different things so that you can eventually get your character that'll see you through to the end. Whereupon, of course, you will unlock more stuff, because it has plenty of, it has, I think, 2 other difficulty modes or 3 other ones. after normal, but you can only play the normal mode to begin with. And yeah, there's just all kinds of little unlockables and bonus things that you can get for playing further into the game. So it's definitely really high on the challenge factor. But I like the look of it, and I really, really like the soundtrack, which is, you know, the usual thing I say in reviews, but this one has this really cool, like, very edgy, very bitey, like, you know, sort of synth metal, and with like really cool drums and stuff. So it's just got that, like, I don't know, sounds like badass music from about 10 years ago.
Nice. Which is always good. Badass music is always going to be badass for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like, I really, really enjoy heavy music in first person shooters. I always feel like that's very appropriate. I'm not into first person shooters that just have ambience.
Yeah.
For a soundtrack. That's not me. Yeah.
And first person shooters, like, you need some metal there. Look at Doom. They know what's
exactly.
up.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And this game did clearly look at Doom, and they were like, what if we did this, but instead of, you know, Martians,
we made it all randomized.
Yeah, Martian demons in like office buildings. We're going to make, you know, sea creatures in big empty rooms. I don't know. I don't really get, like, that's the one thing I don't get about the game is that you are traveling across rooms. It does appear to be just empty, like, big rooms and stuff, but like, the enemies are swimming around as if it is the ocean. So, like, some of them are. Some of them are on foot, and some of them are like a floaty whale. I don't know.
Maybe they started with the name Paranautical Activity and just worked from there. Like, how do we get the nautical in here?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, Paranautical makes me think that maybe they're ghosts as well.
Maybe.
So
they're ocean ghosts with an awesome metal dubstep soundtrack.
Yes, perfect.
Awesome.
You got it.
So $8 on this one, what do you think? How many wubs would you give it?
I would give it wub wub out of wubs. No. Yeah, $8. Come on, how many first person shooters are you gonna get for $8? This one I think gets more into like this is very like the target audience of this is clearly gonna be people who want a first-person shooter experience to also be a highly difficult roguelike. I don't often see those two genres combining, so really this is one that if you just want a unique game with an interesting take on things, then yeah, go ahead and pick it up. It's definitely an adventure in the abstract. And, you know, $8, again, that's a fine entry price for a Switch game, so I say go ahead and I say try it for people who aren't into the idea immediately, and a buy it for whoever this actually sounds appealing to, because it's well executed. So
nice.
There you go.
Sounds good. Well, Chris, that is it for this episode. Thanks as always for coming on and chatting with me. Thanks to everyone else for coming on and doing their reviews as well. Chris, do you have any final words to end the show?
Trying to come up with a pun about wub under the sea. So that's it.